Episode 8 of the Occupational Safety Leadership Podcast with Dr. Drew Hinton. Today, Drew and I talk about CBD in the workplace. Today, we have Dr. Drew Hinton, and we're going to talk about CBT in the workplace. First off, Drew, if you could give us just a little bit about your background and just kind of what made you start to focus on this topic.
Sure. So right now I'm the president and CEO of Aero Safety. We're a safety consulting firm. But my background, I've got 15 years in safety from workplace safety and health. But I'm also in conjunction with that, I was served 10 years as a career firefighter EMT in Louisville, Kentucky. So kind of got what I like to consider both sides of the fence. So seeing when, you know, things don't go right, then hopefully on that front end of it when things do go right. So I became interested in the CBD topic just because, you know, it's a thing that there's not a lot of guidance on. There's a lot of misconceptions. So I wanted to take a deep dive into, you know, trying to help alleviate some of that confusion.
Mm-hmm. So when somebody takes CBT, I think I'm just old and really don't understand all that stuff. Is it like the same thing as basically taking pot, the same thing as smoking pot, as what you think about from like the 60s and 70s, or is it something totally different?
So just pure CBD by itself, that's where it kind of differentiates between what people understand and what they don't understand. So there's pure CBD, and then there's CBD that has the THC, that's what actually gives you the high. That's what's in the marijuana. No matter if it's the 60s or 70s, the stronger form of it versus now. But pure CBD by itself will not get you high. There's actually one particular drug that's approved by the FDA currently. It's Epidiolex, and it's actually approved for some childhood seizure syndromes. Oh. That's the only thing that's approved. That's the only thing that's approved by the FDA, but it's like 99.9% pure CBD. So there's very, very minimal other contents of that stuff, but it's had really successful results in those childhood seizure syndromes. So again, just the pure CBD by itself, you know, there's lots of claims whether it makes medical benefits, but they've obviously been unproven. So the FDA kind of, if a company tries to make claims about, you know, what benefits that the CBD does make, FDA usually issues a warning or a red flag just because it hasn't been proven. There's not a lot of research on it, but it's when you throw that THC into it that it really starts causing issues. And the problem with that is you really don't know what you're getting. You know, if you go, whether you get it from a gas station, you order it online, you've got a little bit better idea because you can request that COA, that certificate of analysis, and maybe get some kind of general idea of how much THC is in there. But if you're going and buying one off the shelf at the mall, at the gas station, especially, it's really taking a toss up as, you know, what the content of it is. Even if it says zero THC, there may be some traces in there because of other batches they're making that same manufacturer.
Right. So I have seen it over at gas stations. And of course, I don't even know enough to even pick it up to even read it to say, okay, this will do, this won't do. I do have a neighbor who has it in some kind of a cream, and she rubs it on her knee and does some other kinds of things too then. So then if it's not going to get you high and they really haven't proven the benefits, it seems to be more and more prevalent out in the workforce. What are people taking the CBD for then?
So, you know, I've actually got some family members that have taken like the creams and the salves, kind of like what you were mentioning. We got one that takes it for restless leg syndromes, and they swear that it works great. You know, it may not eliminate 100%. They swear it works great. But a lot of the people that I've talked to and dealt with, they're really one of two reasons. So one, they're dealing with alleviating some of the chronic pain and inflammation that they maybe were, you know, previously taking opioids or even just over-the-counter painkillers, and are trying to get away from some of that stuff. I've had some other people that say it helps with their anxiety, their depression. Some people even say that it helps with their PTSD. Of course, those are all, you know, not drastically proven medical benefits. It's just word of mouth. But there's, you know, there are lots of I guess I'm using air quotes, claims on what, you know, what those things will help out with. You know, and, you know, one of the, you know, essentials and kind of hopes of, you know, my research that I did on the CBD was to try to find, you know, either way, is it acceptable form of an alternative to those options or is it not? You know, when I'm doing this stuff, trying not to be biased, I want to find out just for sure one way or the other, hey, this is safe or it's not safe. And if it is safe, then this is it's an alternative to opioids or even over-the-counter stuff.
Yeah, I know that in the safety field, we're very focused on drugs and alcohol and workplace accidents and all that stuff. But many times I also think about the over-the-counter medications too. Is that making somebody sleepy or drowsy or not focused? Isn't actually a real word, but I mean just you're not in your right state of mind.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So you've got, I mean, you always got the impairment issue. Like you just said, it can be prescription or non-prescription. Doesn't really matter. There's always, and that's, if it's non-prescription, that may be something that an employer doesn't even know about, unless there's some reason to suspect it, they're never going to ask it. And most likely employers are never going to mention anything about it. But, lots of different things can cause, impairment issues, which can turn into workplace safety and health issues.
And I guess that people are still keeping the THC and monitoring for that. But if you get some really good CBT, it may not have that in there, and that might be exactly what the person is looking for. It's just kind of like that nice middle ground where they're not actually high, but they do have some pain relief. Anxiety or some other form of like relief in this whole thing.
Right. And what differentiates, what they consider hemp versus marijuana? They passed it back in 2018 during the Farm Bill. They separated at 0.3% THC content concentration. So anything above that 0.3% threshold is considered, in the eyes of the government, it's considered marijuana. Anything less than that 0.3% is considered THC. And that'll get into, like referring to like your drug testing, depending on how stringent and how your level of detection for your drug testing, it may or may not show up. So somebody may be taking, let's say 0.2, 0.25% THC. And because your threshold on your drug testing may not be that low, they could be taking stuff that is close to that marijuana and never showing up on a drug test. And it all, really all depends on what type of test you're doing. If you're using a urine analysis, some people are, I've seen a lot of the market, like just the saliva test. Of course, those are just qualitative. They're qualitative tests, they're not quantitative. So it just tells you, do you have it in your system? But it doesn't tell you how much, it doesn't tell you when you took it. So there's lots of different routes, but they can also kind of get the employer in trouble. If it has nothing to do with an incident, then that can be kind of put you in a bind on whether you can enforce it or not. There are some places that say like DOT that have a strict zero tolerance policy, and they put out a notice, I think it was like 2016, somewhere around there, that said, basically, don't risk it. We have a strict zero tolerance THC policy. We don't care where it comes from. If it shows up, you test positive, and the MRO reviews it and says it's positive, then you're in trouble and have to deal with that.
I don't even know. I don't even know what different levels are even being tested. But every place that I've worked has always had a zero tolerance then. So I don't know if they're kind of capping at 3%, or it really is zero. Actually means zero. Out there. So
Good point. Good.
just how prevalent is it out there in the workplace?
It's becoming more and more prevalent. I know, I'm a consultant now, but prior to this, when I worked directly for companies as their, corporate safety director, I had employees coming up to me and say, "Hey, I'm interested in taking the CBD," or some even say, "I'm already taking it," and they're asking me, "How does our policy reflect it? Is it okay to take?" Some people, obviously are not going to tell you. You're not going to know 100%, but it's becoming more and more prevalent because people are making those claims. They're finding out from a friend or a coworker and making those claims of, "Hey, it helps me sleep at night," or, "Hey, it's making, helping with my pain," whatever that may be. Like I said, it's becoming more and more prevalent. And, I've had more and more people ask me from both private industry where I worked before, as well as a consultant wanting to know, does my employer's policy specifically address CBD? Or, the big issue that I found in some of the research is, can they kind of just lump that in, indirectly into the marijuana policy, and they just assume that marijuana and CBD is going to show up on the same test, which most of the time it's not, unless it does have that THC content.
So are people still testing out there for accidents? Because that was a very big thing years and years ago, and it seems like over the years it's kind of fallen off the wayside. It's definitely there still for things like DOT physicals, and DOT accidents. Is it still happening out there in places like chemical plants and factories and all the rest?
Yeah, some of those high hazard areas like chemical plants, refineries, some of those are a little bit more prevalent as far and more consistent on their, post-incident, post-accident testing. But it's kind of outside of that, it's really hit or miss. I mean, I've seen companies that are very stringent on it. I've seen companies that are relaxed. And when you get to the regulatory side of things, I mean, it varies from one presidential administration to the next. So some people will say, or not really say anything. And then, the next presidential administration will say, you can only do it if you suspect that it has a cause, it's a causal factor in some kind of incident. And so they, like I said, it varies from every 4 to 8 years. But like I said, outside of those high hazard industries and of course the DOT regulated things like that, it's honestly hit or miss. I see probably 50% that do and they're consistent with it, and 50% that don't. Lots of different reasons. Hey, we've got, a limited amount of workforce, maybe a small company that's got 30 or 40 employees or so. And you come up and say, we need to send them out for a post-incident test. They're like, well, this is a good worker. I don't want to lose my worker. I really don't care if they're doing marijuana. And they really don't either. A, they don't understand the risk, or, they're just ignorant of the topic and just kind of really careless in that aspect. So, it's kind of a toss-up overall.
Right. And I would have to think that in states that have stopped the enforcement of pot, that it's probably more prevalent out there because they're not probably worried as much on that THC content out there. So maybe they're not really worried about having the really pure CBT because if nobody's gonna test or nobody's gonna enforce it, they're probably not that worried about it.
Exactly. And I mean, the companies can always say we're going to follow the federal, the federal guidelines, because obviously the federal government hasn't, legalized marijuana. So they have every right to go above and beyond. But like you said, if Colorado, all these other states that have legalized recreational marijuana, they're, like you said, they're usually going to have no care which way, which kind of CBD, if it's, 0% THC or if it's above that 0.3% THC threshold, just because, like, as you mentioned, it's not, it's, or it's fully legalized in their state. So there's really, no worries about, in their eyes of what they're taking.
Right. So then things like CBD, can you take it and mix it with food also and almost make like you hear about people who make things like brownies and cookies with pot and all the rest? Could you do the same thing with CBD?
Yeah, essentially, some of these, especially the liquids like the tinctures and the drops that you can have, some of those come with like mint flavors that they are okay to take it kind of by itself. And they also have some that are unflavored that you can drop in your water or anything, any drink that you can think of, because it doesn't have any kind of, like I said, flavoring to it. People are putting it in, whether it's brownies or really any kind of food, whatever they want to do. But like I've more commonly seen them put it in, they get the unflavored ones and put it in really any drink that they want to put it in.
Okay. So how are they extracting this from the marijuana plant? Or is it something that's made in a lab?
Well, they can kind of go both ways, but they're extracting it. And what you're looking at is what they're trying to get out if they go with the THC. So they can pull out the CBD. There's lots of variations of all these components and chemicals that are in the marijuana, the cannabis plants, because there's, see, you may have seen, different areas and different sales tax that you're looking at CBD, CBG, all these different acronyms and letters thrown around. So they can extract that, and then they can also extract the Delta 9 THC, which is the primary one that you're going after for the high that you're seeking, or just maybe a stronger CBD if it's still less than that 0.3%. But there's also Delta 8s, is kind of up and coming. I've seen more and more prevalence of that. I guess it's kind of coming to, maybe the people think that it's less hazardous because it's not the Delta 9. It maybe gets some of the still, maybe some of the, still same benefits to that. But, they're like, so there's lots of acronyms and letters they can throw around there. And there's obviously some extraction processes to it on how they're going to go about getting that. And then, like I said, you can, if you get something from a, a reputable distributor, you can request that certificate of analysis, and they'll break it down by every single component of that and show you what percentage it is, all that good stuff.
So let me switch gears and go over a little scenario. And maybe this scenario is not a real thing that you would ever face in life, but you're a firefighter and you show up on site and a guy is, in a trench, in a confined space, whatever the accident happens to be, you get him out, you start to treat him. Is there like any signs or symptoms that somebody would be on CBT, or somebody has to literally say, I am on the following or taking the following?
Yeah, most of the stuff, any CBD, you're never going to notice it. And that's the kind of one of the major misconceptions as well. Unless they've got a really strong THC concentration in that, you may, get some suspicion, but most likely you're not. Even when you get to the THC that are above that 0.3%, or I'm sorry, the CBD, it's above that 0.3% THC concentration. The concentrations are still usually not high enough. They're not going to cause you to have bloodshot eyes. They're not going to have that, kind of skunk odor with the marijuana. So, like you said, most of the time, the only way you'll know it is if they tell you. You can do post-incident testing, and depending on which one you do, maybe, like I said, the saliva test is just going to tell you that they have in their system, doesn't tell you, when they took it. But with that being said, it's also a shorter time frame. So that's why some companies are choosing that saliva test, because it only goes back a couple hours. So you'll know that, if it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they got to work at 6 a.m. and you do a saliva test and it detects it, they've probably taken it in that time frame since they've been at work.
Ah, okay.
But overall, it's whether it's CBD with or without THC, like I said, even the strongest, CBDs with the strongest amount of THC in there is most likely never going to show any kind of symptoms that we would, generally associate with marijuana use.
Right. Well, it sounds like the benefits that people are after, they're probably, I say that I'm trying to extrapolate what I think the benefits could be. And it sounds like people aren't actually trying to get high. They're trying to relieve some form of a pain, a anxiety, I want to feel better about what I'm doing now and everything. So it sounds like they're trying to find some kind of relief to some kind of ache, pain, or anxiety in life.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, no matter what brand you get, they're going to have dosage requirements. Don't take more than X amount of doses in a 24-hour period or whatever, whatever dosage requirements are on there. So if you're, like you said, you're not going to see people that are just, downing these whole bottles of tincture and just pouring it in their drink and trying to go from there. They're using it responsibly. And if they have used, if you use marijuana in the past, they're going to have a different tolerance than somebody that's using the CBD. Even if it has THC in it, they're going to have a different tolerance. So, if they've used some stuff in the past, used some marijuana, whether it's, legal or not, if they go back to CBD with THC, they're going to have a different tolerance, and they may have to take a little bit more than the average person because, hey, I've been taking this much in the past from my other drugs that I'm using, and now I'm going to a smaller dose, so it's not as effective. I'm not getting as big of an impact, so they may, they may take a little bit more. But even so, like I said, unless they're dumping an entire bottle and just kind of chugging it, they're not going to get any high. They're like you said, they're kind of going for those, claimed medical benefits for, a variety of reasons, wherever they may have found that information, but they're trying to get some kind of medical benefit from that.
Right. Very good. Is there anything else that you could tell a old timer that maybe, of course, because all this stuff is so new to me, even though that's been out there, it's just recently has it kind of popped up on my kind of like radar and the industries that I'm at and everything else. And so I'm still kind of trying to learn and understand this whole thing myself.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's been around for decades, but it's just within the last 10 years or so really started to become popular. So when we're looking at stuff, I kind of go by the phrase I've used for a lot of things is trust but verify, right? So if I say I'm on a, if a company does have a zero tolerance THC policy, one of my last workplaces I was at, we were a state certified drug and alcohol free workplace. They're a lot more stringent. They required zero THC, a more stringent 11 panel drug screen, all that stuff. And so if you do, make sure one, your company's going to allow it, or, see what their testing thresholds is. They, they may not even know. Honestly, you get some companies that, I've never looked into that. Let's consult with your HR or legal department, whatever it is, to figure out something, or they may have to reach out to somebody. But again, make sure you're getting it from a reputable source. If you look at, like I said, there's one FDA drug, the Epidiolex, that's currently approved for those childhood seizure syndromes. But if you think about the FDA process, it's a three-step trial. It takes a long time to go through that stuff. I mean, compared to the vaccine, there's no emergency authorization for this stuff. They're going through rigorous trials in order, and they have to bring that data and that research to the FDA before it gets approved. So it's an in-depth process. And so if you look at the Epidiolex, for example, if you look at that and knowing it's 99.9% CBD concentration or content, then you can realize that, hey, maybe it's overall, I'm using this term loosely, overall safe. Like I said, everybody responds a little bit differently, but if you get it from a reputable distributor, not a gas station, anything like that, you can get that certificate of analysis, printed out. I've gotten some that I've used for research, and it's sometimes you'll get a sheet for the entire batch. So if I order like a box of, let's say 50 bottles of tincture, for my research, they're going to send one COA for that entire batch of 50 bottles. So, and it's and like anything else, it's going to vary from one bottle to the next just slightly. But just make sure it's obviously against, it's is or not against your policy. But another thing that we there's a couple research or studies out there that actually looked at the accuracy of the labeling on there, and it was like 60, almost 60% of the labels were inaccurate on there. Now that can go both ways. It includes both THC concentration being higher than what was on a label, and also THC that was lower than what was on a label. But it was almost 60% that was inaccurate in some way or another. So again, it's kind of a toss-up on how much you're actually getting, just because it's not regulated by the FDA. The path that it's been going, just statistically speaking, Kentucky, for example, here in Kentucky, CBD is legal, and that's all we've got now. But overall, across the U.S., kind of the way that things go is they legalize CBD first. Then they move to medicinal marijuana, and then they move to recreational marijuana. It's just kind of a stepping stone. So, like I said, like going off the phrase, kind of trust but verify. Make sure that whatever you're getting is from a reputable source. And if you want to go in depth of getting that COA to make sure that, hey, this is a concentration that was tested in this particular batch. And like I said, the big thing is making sure that your company is going to okay that. So if you're covered by DOT, it's a strict definite no. But if you're in a state that has legalized CBD, then maybe it's a little bit more relaxed, and your company may or may not approve that.
A lot of the operations that I have now is with the company that does a lot of defense work, and so they have places all over the country and overseas, and so we have to follow the federal guidelines. But of course, we do have people in places where everything is fine and legal, and they want to know why they can't follow the state law as opposed to the federal law. So it's always a really hard sell to say, well, your job says federal, even though you're in a state that it's okay. So yeah, that's been a little bit of a tough sell on some of the folks then out
Yep,
there.
absolutely.
So speaking of studies, I think that you were trying to get a grant, right, at some point in time to do some more studies, or am I thinking of somebody else?
Yeah, I've definitely been reaching out for grants, and I was able to get some distributors that would kind of partner with, getting these CBD samples, the bottles of tincture to help supply and help out with this research so we can push it out and try to, like I said, find out one way or other. It doesn't matter. I'm staying, unbiased, but find out one way or the other, hey, this is safe, this is not safe. But the research that's in the works right now is to, give this stuff out and actually use different, apps and different ways of qualitative and quantitative testing to determine if there is impairment associated with it. There are some things out there that I actually was at the National Safety Council conference this past couple weeks ago, or yeah, a couple weeks ago, and there was probably a hand, 3 to 4 different companies out there that are using testing on-site te or methods of on-site testing for THC marijuana. So I mean, but they're all kind of based on the same principle. You know, there was one that would look at the concentration. It takes about 15 minutes to get a concentration, but there was one there and one that I've worked with in the past that would actually, you know, give you a simulated amount of events and then or tasks in order to do, and then you take that for some of those say 1 week, some of those say 2 weeks prior to taking anything, and that will give you a baseline score. And so then you would take the test. You know, I was talking to some companies that take the test daily, right at the beginning of your shift. You would take these, do these tests and tasks, and then it would give you another score. So you would compare that to your baseline. So for example, if my score was, my baseline was 50, and then I come to work and it's showing up 70 or 80, hey, there's a big difference here. The problem is, you know, as far as THC is concerned, CBD is, I don't know what that impairment's from. It could be the CBD, it could be on CBD THC, it could be I'm just fatigued, you know, lack of sleep. It just says I'm impaired. So if I need to go further on the testing, determine if it's drugs, alcohol, whatever that may be, then I'll need to do that. But at that point, like I said, you don't really know, you know, what's causing that impairment level.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How about that? A daily test.
Yeah, I mean they're fairly quick too. I mean you know some of these are on you can get them on a app on your phone. Some companies have said they've got a tablet that they're using, and overall that test takes, you know, usually right at a minute or so, 60 seconds. But it also depends on how many people you've got in your workforce. If I'm testing maybe 20, 30 people on a daily basis versus, you know, a company's got 500-600 people at their sites, that's going to take a little bit longer to get everybody tested and before they start work. So that may be a little bit of a hassle. So I'm starting, you know, just what I've seen is it's usually with those smaller companies or people that have, you know, maybe they want to do additional staff to allow them to do, you know, more testing at the same time, maybe five at a time versus, you know, the one we're after another.
So when you were talking to these companies, so what's the benefit of doing the daily test for every single person out there?
Yeah, this is just being consistent across the board. You know, if you look at OSHA, it's really not stated in hardly any areas that's about evaluating their fitness for duty. Most companies will have that policy in place, or, you know, a lot of companies, maybe not all of them, but most companies will have a fit for duty policy, especially like if you get into like public safety. I know the fire department was very strict on having that fit for duty. And I've worked at chemical plants that were very stringent on that stuff. But they're looking at that. Like I said, OSHA really doesn't mention a whole lot about it, but that's what they're evaluating. They're seeing, are you fit to do your job? So they're really trying to be consistent with that and making sure that no matter, like I said, what the reason is, it could be the CBD that contains THC, it could be fatigue. They're just wanting to see, are you capable of doing the job in a safe manner? You know, there may be something that shows up mid shift, but they're wanting to kind of make sure before you start work, are you okay to go in here and start doing the task? You know, some companies may do it, you know, just for those safety sensitive positions, you know, maybe not the admin people in the front office, but maybe forklift operators, crane operators, heavy equipment, you know, people that may be kind of what they're focusing on as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that could be just a, not just a high hazard, but you have a high potential, of course, to have a hazard and then have a cascade. You know, the guy who's driving a forklift drives it into a vat of sulfuric acid, which then causes a leak, which then goes onto a motor and just, you know, so
right.
So maybe they're looking at it from that angle then. So
you know. Yep.
Drew, we are almost out of time. I didn't even ask that many questions at all. So I have a lot more questions. I'd like to bring you back for part two and maybe a month or so then. So but before we go ahead there and wrap up for the day, where can people catch up with you to read more about your research and just to kind of learn more about CBD out there over in the workplace?
Sure. So the most easiest way to find me is on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there. And I've actually got, I published my research in three different peer-reviewed articles, and I've got that posted on my LinkedIn profile. So if they want to go on there, they're, you know, they can look at all the research, the different journal articles, and you can download it, you know, use whatever you want to get out of that. And as I, you know, produce more research on this particular topic, I'll post that because I want to share it with other people. It's not just for my personal benefits, trying to benefit the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Drew, also, because it's really easy to come up with good stuff and kind of sit back and hold it to yourself and kind of keep it almost like this little secret that only you know. So thank you so much for sharing it with everybody out there, because it seems like it's just kind of starting to be an issue that maybe we have to focus on in the future. It could also be something that, because we really don't know that in the future we find out that a little bit's going to be okay, and that maybe there would be a panel of now 12 drugs out there, and CBD cannot go over X percentage in your blood or something, you know. So yeah. So
Absolutely.
thank you, Drew. So and with that, we have Dr. Drew Hinton. Thank you so much, Drew, and I look to doing a part two in the future.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Drew.